The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Progressive presents an interview with your upstairs neighbor.
Hey, it's Rick from upstairs.
Yeah, I take it seriously. When I play R&B at 1 in the morning, that's me saying, hey, I'm here for you. And I enjoy repetitive bass lines.
I only use expired batteries in my smoke detectors.
Nice, right?
Yeah, upstairs neighbors help people forget their troubles. Give them something else to focus on.
Ooh, want to see how high I can jump?
Progressive can't save you from your upstairs neighbor.
No, wait, let me try again.
But we can save you money when you bundle renters and auto insurance with us. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Bundle discount not available in all states or situations.
You are listening to a Live Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Welcome back to Delhi Decoded. Hi everyone, I'm Pritika Khanna and I'm here with your weekly update from the national capital. In this podcast, each episode, we dive into the most famous buildings and landmarks from Delhi and their stories, but through pin codes. For those of you who are from Delhi, I'm sure you have some very special memories from these places. For those of you who aren't, don't worry. I'll help you get a peek into Delhi. At the start of this year, the pin codes 110094 and 110095 were like war zones as communal riots broke out in parts of Northeast District of Delhi. The incidents of violence, which began on 23rd February, continued for the next 3 days across these two pin codes, affecting lives and livelihoods. Stone pelting, gunshots, robbery, harassment, arson, petrol bombs in these areas led to the loss of life and displacement of families who lost their homes and their belongings. A large number of residents of this area are migrants who run small businesses or are daily wage earners. At the time of the riot, the Aam Aadmi Party-led Delhi government had just been elected for a consecutive term with a brute majority. The government announced compensation amounts and various other relief measures. However, the civil society has had a major role to play in rehabilitation. With the imposition of the lockdown due to the pandemic, the implementation has now been further delayed. I have with me Mishika Singh, who is a lawyer and has started the Lawyers for Detainees Network that has been working to organize legal and relief measures, starting with the Anti-Citizenship Amendment Act protests. Since March, Mishika has been working with families who have been affected by the riots in providing legal aid, in getting them compensation and various other measures. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
I'm going to get straight to the questions. Can you describe what the situation was like on the ground in March when you first went to Northeast Delhi?
So the riots were on from 24th of February, and we actually managed to get this right before March, 29th of February. We were around that area since before March, but when we reached there after the riots, it was quite a shocker because it actually took us quite a few days to access that place. Whenever we tried to access it, the environment was very hostile. The people were very hostile. They weren't really letting us enter. And initially, 24th, 25th, 26th were the riot days. So 27th is when we first tried to get there because there were families who were calling and saying they haven't eaten in 3 days. So initially, we were only trying to get ration to them and just to get them like basic food and all. So that's what we were doing initially, but that didn't happen at all. Then we tried to arrange some local people to come to a common place and take the food. And it had to be cooked food because we'd been hearing that houses had been destroyed and people were sort of stranded. So we couldn't send them ration and all. So we did that. Yeah. Finally, on 29th morning, some of our people went and scouted the place and finalized this one school in Mustafabad to set up a medical camp and a legal camp. When we went, there, initially no one came. So there was, absolutely no interaction with any of the victims, or we don't know how to go about it. Tell people that some help is there in case they need anything. But it took us actually a few days, for things to sort of start moving and people to start coming. But once they did, it was quite shocking to see how people had been chased so far away, physically and mentally, in terms of that help is not going to come, that they were so reluctant. They tried to get to the police when the riots were happening. They tried to get to other people to help them, and no one had really helped them. So they were quite reluctant and hesitant initially, even when they were giving details in their legal complaints and all. So the atmosphere was initially hostile, then it was out of reluctance. It took us some time to build trust, to get the whole thing moving.
You know, one can't even imagine what the residents would have gone through at the time. But when post the riots, you saw a lot of announcements that were made by both the central and the state government. Do you think, A, the relief measures that were made were enough? And what were the kind of relief measures that were announced at the time?
So the Delhi government announced their scheme on 28th of February, saying that this is the compensation that will be given, and we are going to set up camps, and we are going to set up legal aid thing, and we're going to set up rehabilitation centers, all sorts of things that you expect the government to be doing in a riot-like situation. From the central government, there was nothing particularly catering to what had happened. So, but the Delhi government did come in. It unfortunately was not of any help. I won't even say a lot of help. It was actually quite useless and sort of spoiled things further, because people got their hopes up that things will be done for them, and then they weren't. For example, we're still struggling with compensation till date. We're in July right now. The riots happened in February. And there are a lot of people who still not received compensation, who don't know the status of their application, who are being made to run around. So to facilitate compensation, the Delhi government had appointed the Delhi Legal Services Authority, so for legal aid and for helping. They were there for some time at the SDM offices, but they also eventually stopped being at those places. So the legal help that was coming from the state government, that was not there. The camps that were not set up for a very long time, which is very surprising, because civil society coming from different areas managed to organize themselves in a more orderly fashion much quicker than a government, which is literally supposed to do this. Like, that's their job, governance.
Yeah.
So it was quite upsetting. And in fact, when we were looking for a way to go and set up camps, there was some news of the CM and his party people going to Rajghat and praying for peace, which it was just, there was one disappointing news after the other. And we had visuals of the place burning and people calling and saying that, people are dying and there's blood and there's fire, and we have our leaders going to Rajghat and praying. It was quite disappointing, but the relief measures have not really panned out in terms of one compensation. In terms of rehabilitation, I don't know of anything which has concretely been done for rehabilitation by the Delhi government. I know of a lot of civil society groups who are working and who have been able to raise funds and help these people sort of get back on their feet. But I don't have any such news where the government has really helped these people. Same with compensation. Like, they have released compensation to quite a few people, as they claim, but the ones that we are in touch with have not received anything. And the amount also that was announced was really, really low. Like, for example, in the category of serious injury, the amount given in the scheme is 2 lakh rupees. The first problem is, doesn't really describe what a serious injury is. There's minor injury, serious injury, and permanent incapacitation. Those are the three categories, and for the serious injury, only 2 lakh has been announced, which is not really a very high amount in today's times in a place like Delhi.
Also, given the fact that we're talking about people's lives and their entire life savings, it's not just about...
Yeah, so, you know, that's the thing. It's just, I don't know how they come up with these amounts. And the best part is that these amounts are lower than some of the riot amounts that had been given earlier. Like, if you draw a comparison with amounts that have been given for other riots previously, this is a really low amount. Like, someone who has a serious injury, there are people, a lot of our victims have gunshot wounds. Now, that's not permanent incapacitation, but it's not a minor injury. So, it is a serious injury. It will take about 6 months to sort of get fine, depending on where the injury is. The person will take that much time to recover and therefore will just be a liability because they won't be earning. There are medical bills to pay. There's hospital visits that will happen. 2 lakh rupees covers nothing. Yeah, so that's also a problem, that the amount is very vaguely calculated. It's not really not really enough, even for the destruction of houses. It says minor, substantial, and total. So those are the three categories. Now, people who've lost their entire houses, you know, three floor ke ghar unke pure jal gaye, usko bhi substantial mein kiya hai. So there's nothing in total. And it just makes you wonder, then what is total damage? Like, literally, my entire house has been burned down, or everything has been looted and then set on fire or vandalized, just, you know, or a combination of things.
In terms of, if you had to give a number to it, what would you, like, in terms of percentage, what percentage of people do you think have received compensation, even though you're saying it's much lesser than what should be given as compensation? What percentage would have actually got it by now?
So we're in touch with people, only people who haven't gotten their compensation or have gotten really low compensation. So it'll be very difficult for us to say how many have gotten it. But the SDM sites have published lists. So, you know, all these SDM, 6-7 of them have published their own list saying these people have gotten compensation. So from there, you get around, you know, 300, 400 from each of these lists, and they're around 6-7 lists. So that's the, I think you can just calculate from there sort of a thing that around, let's say 2,000 people would have gotten compensation.
But how many people are in touch with you?
The site says, we are right now working on cases of around 40-50 people, different people. But we have our data of 400 people from the camp that we ourselves worked on. So we're looking at them. Apart from that, a lot of cases have come where people have said that, you know, like the amount that is being granted. So I'd say that maybe 2,000 people have gotten compensation. But even for destruction of their entire house, they've gotten, like, we had this one person who's lost three stories of his house. So all the entire building is gone. And he's been given 5,000 rupees. So his name features in the list. But it's bizarre. Like, and it's not like it was a rented accommodation or anything, you know, like that. That, okay, the owner should get money and you'll only get money for the things that have been stolen or taken away or lost, because the damage to property is not really damage to your thing. I can understand all of that, but it's not the case. So the list is there, but I don't think the list really helps.
Are the relief camps still functional?
No. The relief camp stopped functioning. 20th of March was the last date when we were in Mustafabad. This was a Friday. And that day, the SDM office randomly got up around 12 and said, we are not going to accept forms from today. So we asked them, if that was the last day. They said yes. So we asked them, where was it announced? They said, hum 4 baje announce kar denge. We tried to reason with them, saying that you can't announce the deadline on the deadline. The whole point is that you inform in advance. But that didn't happen. So there was a writ listed in the High Court where compensation was sort of being discussed, and it was one of the points that was raised in the writ. So in that we raised this issue of the SDM office not accepting forms, in which the Government Council gave us an undertaking saying no, that he'll accept forms and we will issue a notification in this regard. But that notification never came. So 20th of March was the last date when the camp was functional. 22nd was the Janta curfew. From 25th we were in lockdown. After that, we've not gone back to that area. But we're still working remotely. There's a team that's working remotely. There are some people who've gone back, not the entire camp. Yeah, not the camp per se.
Not the camp. How would you say the pandemic, because, you know, as you also mentioned that the pandemic happened soon after and we've been under a lockdown. How has the pandemic affected the rehabilitation process?
So because of the pandemic, like right before the pandemic, they lost their homes. They lost their, if they had a rickshaw or, you know, they were mostly like small time workers and these small shops and radies and cycle rickshaw pits selling things and all of that. They lost all of that. And so when the pandemic hit, they didn't have a room to stay in, like no house. They didn't have a job. They didn't have any source of income. So the relief work sort of, like, that's why we had to take a break from the legal work and shift completely to relief work, because suddenly everyone was without any food and they couldn't really access things because it was the lockdown. And people who were homeless couldn't really cook anything. So they had to be given cooked food. So we had to shift a lot of our time, resources, energy to actually doing relief work. That changed a lot of things. That's how we helped. And that time people were also not focusing on getting their compensation anymore, because they're like, right now, if you can arrange a meal for us, that's fine. Like, we come to the compensation later, but my children are starving. And around Eid time, I remember one of the people from the camp called and she said, meri paanch betiyan hain, wo roza rakh rahi hain, aur shaam mein peene ke liye hamare paas paani nahi ho raha hai thanda. So main subah paani bhar ke rakh deti hu taki shaam tak wo thoda thanda ho jaye, or it cools down a little. And that's how they're breaking their roza. That's our condition.
Oh, God.
So if you can please arrange for food. It was really bad. And then the public, this thing, the public distribution system, the government ones, again, they were too slow to act. I don't understand how this has been happening. But in matters of administration and governance and, you know, why you elect a party to sort of run things efficiently, I think we've all performed much better and we've been swifter and quicker, and it's just happened more from the civil society than the government. They eventually came in when they had the token system, and you know, you could go online and get your token number from your Aadhaar card, or go to the ration shop and show your ration card and all. But these things happened too late. I don't know what. It's just amazing that, you know, every time someone else has to sort of jump in to sort of do damage control, and then the government will casually walk in and be like, okay, now we got it. But that's not what a government is for. You can't got it when things are already taken care of. So that's a big problem that we faced because of Corona. And because of that, compensation was completely on hold. So the second big problem that we faced because of Corona was that the online portal had stopped working. So when the Delhi government assistance scheme was organized, there was another part of it which was completely online, where you could just go on the Delhi government site. It had an option for the riot victims. Clicked on that. It would show you the entire scheme. Then you could click on apply online and apply for compensation, fill in the entire form and submit it. So initially we were doing that because these people were, you know, really scared to go to the SDM and go to the police station, especially right after things had happened. So it was a traumatic situation for them. So the web IDs were being generated initially, so to sort of a receipt number, but after a point in time, the same web ID would be generated for different forms. So the site was malfunctioning. Eventually the site stopped functioning completely. I think that was one thing that really affected our work during lockdown, because had that been functional, had the website been working, then we could have at least continued filing the compensation forms. And the people who wanted to sort of get an update on their status or something, or wanted to find out anything, maybe that could have been done by the Delhi government by actually making that site work. But that didn't happen. And it didn't happen till really late. We had to eventually file a writ in High Court and ask for this as one of the things. There were people who weren't able to file their compensation forms and the SDM was refusing to accept them. So we filed a writ for that. And we also said in that the online portal should start working again. So this was on 22nd June, where the Government Council very confidently came and said, no, we're accepting forms. There's no deadlines stipulated by us as such. Those were his words. So that's what he said. And then about the online thing, he said that will be done immediately. And the next day it was 3rd of July. So from 22nd June till 2nd July, dedicatedly, my colleague who's worked on these matters would try submitting the forms online. But what would happen was there was an option to fill the form. But when you click submit, nothing would happen. It would just be a blank screen. So you think that maybe your form has been submitted. Maybe it's not. It was just one of those things that you never really know for sure. Like you probably after 3 months, the government will tell you, we never received this. And you didn't have any proof to say, well, you had actually filled it. So that was the problem. But right before the next date, which was 3rd of July, on 2nd July evening, two web IDs are generated for these two petitioners. So from 20th March till 2nd of July, there was no access to online portal. And even like the online portal had stopped working in the beginning of March. So a lot of March was also gone and nothing at all. So for a situation like this, where you know the country was in a lockdown, not having a basic online portal to facilitate things, I think that really spoiled things and sort of halted things for a very long time because of COVID.
And added to the, you know, misery of the residents there who already been through so much this year. And it really the did. Pandemic definitely does not make it easier.
Yeah, and you know, in fact, Pritika, when this was happening, Abhi, when they started the online portal again, and they said it's working, this one of these active petitioners, okay, the one who's he's not the petitioner yet, he's one of the active victims who's really making groups and telling people and really wanting to fight to get his compensation, his 5 daughters. He went online and he said the website is now working, and he sent messages to people saying, if you need help, you let me know, I will fill your form. So this person was actually convinced that now it's working. Once I click submit, it's submitted. You know, these people don't think na ki har cheez aapko proof lena padega. Unka life pe ye wo nahi hai na ki for everything that you need a receipt. They think the government has put up a website, we're submitting our details, we submit it, it's done. So it actually ended up fooling a lot of people who otherwise not in the habit of wanting a receipt for everything. Like, we have come to that stage where we take everything with a pinch of salt. If we're submitting a document, we want a receipt. That's they're daily wage workers. They run small businesses. They earn their income through auto rickshaws and e-rickshaws. So for them to be put in that situation, it was quite terrible.
Let's hope there's some relief for residents of these areas who've gone through so much this year. Thank you so much, Mishika, for joining us today.
Thank you, Pritika, for having me.
That's all from me this week. Thank you so much for joining in. I'll be back next week with a new PIN code. Until then, please like, subscribe, and share this podcast. We are always looking to hear from you for your thoughts and suggestions. We're ever present on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at HT Smartcast. You can also reach out to me directly on Twitter at Pritika Khanna. See you next time. Until then, stay safe and healthy.
This was a Live Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
HD Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.